welcome to On the Record with Furniture Today, a podcast that goes behind the headlines to look at the news and the newsmakers, the people and the personalities that give the furniture industry its unique flavor. I'm your host, Bill McLaughlin, Editor-in-Chief of Furniture Today. Welcome to On the Record. My guest this week is Jeremy Hoff, President of Case Goods and Upholstery for Hooker Furniture. Jeremy, we do have the list of questions, but in our pre-interview, we talked a little bit about something that I think really relates to who Hooker is, and your title, I think, in some way reflects that. You are the president of Case Goods and Upholstery, and I think that speaks to the approach that Hooker takes to the marketplace. You were talking about a quote from Clyde Hooker.
Yeah, I actually don't have the exact quote, but his message was that Hooker needed to find itself a niche, was pretty close to what he said. So a lot of our focus ends up being around the categories. So we have collection business, of course, but we have an accent business, we have a home entertainment business, a home office business, the Hooker upholstery business. So we try to focus on these businesses that are all parts of our larger business, but they are categories and they are niches.
So that must give you a real focus on each. I mean, that kind of relates to your title, right? I mean, you're president of upholstery specifically and case goods specifically.
Yes.
So it really gives you a focus.
A big part of our job ends up being making sure our definition within each of those categories is correct, from where we should live in a price point, where our look should be headed, why do we exist? In each category, you have to start with, why do we exist in this category? Why does the consumer want to buy this at the end of the day from us? Why do our customers need this to sell to their consumer? So if you start with that question and work your way towards the end of the process where you should be in that category, I find that helps our team focus and helps us arrive at the place we need to be.
So you gave an example as we were talking, and I don't know if you can share it in advance of High Point Market, but there's an example of that. Can you talk about what your plans are for this category?
Yeah, one of our categories, we're having a major focus in home office. We see home office as an opportunity. I believe, you know, the category for the industry has declined, but it's really gone to lower price points, but there's still a middle to upper mid area that we feel like needs product and needs our product specifically. We still do a pretty significant amount of business in the category. And we're also at market, people will see a timeline. We're doing the history of home office at Hooker Furniture. Hank Long was a major part of that. So you'll see everything that's pretty much happened to our company from, you know, back when we really were, you know, pretty much a major home office supplier to now, and we'll say why we're in it and what we're doing now as well.
Why do you think that category is doing so well again? Why is it such a good category?
I think that more and more people are working out of the home. I think that different people are working out of the home. So it used to be you'd have an executive home office, and it was a very specific way. You had your executive desk, your credenza, you had the pieces everyone knew you had to have. Now it's spread out to other areas of the home. So you may need a writing desk in an area of a home. You may need a file cabinet that doesn't look like a file cabinet. You may need a desk that sometimes it's sit-down desk, maybe it's a standing desk. So there's innovation that's occurring within the category as well, and technology's affected it in a major way. All the laptops and the iPads and everything that people are utilizing don't require the same type of space in furniture. So we're evolving with it and trying to do as much in the category as we can.
Gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of design. I mean, there was that point where everybody had the giant towers, right? And you had to make room for that huge CPU. So everything was closed front and you had to have a big space for storage. And now with a laptop or an iPad, or like you said, a standing desk, I think it opens up visually and aesthetically a whole lot of opportunity. You product designers must love that.
They do, and it does, and you know, we're constantly trying to decide where is it headed, what does this mean? For example, a lot of files are electronic now, so what do you do as far as file cabinets go? Well, we think there's still a certain amount of file storage needed, just not as much. So how do you do that? Do you do that in a piece that doesn't look like a file cabinet? Do you do it, you know? So there's things that we're trying to address in a different way that we feel like at the end of the day will work in a consumer's home.
Now, you're a public company, so obviously people can look at your numbers and they can get all of the details. So I don't want to take a whole lot of time to look at the numbers, and they can listen to you on the conference call along with Paul each month. But most recently, your case goods business was up 12% in net sales, and the upholstery business was up 30%. What is Hooker doing to so outpace? I mean, the industry's growing at about 4%, so as a company, you must be doing something pretty well to be doing that.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I think we have a really, really good team. And we have a team that's made a decision long before me to focus on advantage channels and to make sure that our products are able to be purchased however the consumer wants to purchase them. And so we have a lot of focus, not only on, you know, we still have a major independent business. We focus on that. We try to focus on each part that is important to our business, and we try to. It's still at the end of the day, this is a relationship industry, and we tried our one of our core things that we focus on is we just try to do the right thing, and do what's right for our customer. Our whole goal is win-win relationships.
You use the term advantage channels. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Really, it's what channels in the industry are growing, and what, you know, where's, which tells you where the consumer is really wanting to shop. So we see a lot of growth opportunities in within the advantage channels. You know, that can mean working with contract. You know, we have a contract business that does very well. There's different places within the industry that we focus on.
We were talking also too about Hooker's digital communication and understanding of the way marketing has changed. You've been, as a company, very proactive in that space and looking at how to get in front of the consumer in a changing environment.
Mm-hmm. And that really, John Albanese and his team, they've done a great job understanding how to keep Hooker focused on the right things in that digital marketing arena. And he deserves a ton of credit along with his team.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the importance of team, and you keep coming back to the theme of team. Teams need leaders. And one of the things I'd like to talk to you today is a little bit about leadership. Mm-hmm. and how your leadership style evolved. I want to go back to the first time that you were president of a company. Mm-hmm. It was Theodore Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
What was that like? And let's just kind of go back to the night before that. Mm-hmm. You have your first day, you're about to be president. I'm guessing you got your lunchbox all ready and you know, your shoes were.
Yeah.
What was that like?
I would say scary. I feel, and I still feel this, I feel a huge responsibility to make sure that I'm doing the right things that are good for our company and for the people. There's a lot of people. I depend on a lot of people, and a lot of people depend on me. So it's mutual. And so I have a real fear, or fear is the wrong word, but almost an anxiety that, you know, I need to get this right, you know, because
relate.
If you don't get it right, a lot of people are affected, and I feel that, and I feel it still on a daily basis. And you know, we have at Hooker, we have a lot of people connected to our success in a lot of ways. And when you have that, everyone feels a responsibility to do the right thing and to get to where we need to go, because everyone is connected in that success. So it means a lot, and it's not just words, which it potentially could sound like on a podcast, but it really does mean a lot.
It really does.
Yeah.
One of the things for anybody as they move up in leadership, you always start by managing a small team, mm-hmm. which is a challenge in itself, but it's very direct, right? Yeah. You have frequent contact with a small number of people. As you move up and then you become president of a company, scaling that leadership across a much broader organization, mm-hmm. I know myself, as I moved up in my career, at some point things start to feel a little out of your control. I mean, you have to give people the chance to make independent decisions. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you say, oh my goodness, wait, they did that. And right. Wait, they did that. And how, what's that like as you...
It's you're right. It's a real challenge because when you start out, you're doing more of the actual, you know, stuff. You're grinding, you know, there's more minutiae. You're involved in everything. And as you scale, to your point, it's impossible. You can't do it. I mean, I'll give you an example. One of our VPs of merchandising, they're overseas right now. Another merchant's overseas. Operations guys overseas. So I have a lot of people, we have a lot of people that we count on that are having key discussions, making key decisions, doing things that will heavily impact what we do. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's trust. And it's like I said before, we have really good people or I probably wouldn't sleep very well.
Well, I think too, a lot of young leaders as they're coming up, I've heard a lot of people in my career, they kind of say, well, you know, it's easier if I just do it myself. It takes too long for me to explain it, or I just do it myself. And that's kind of a trap, isn't it?
Yep, very much so. And everyone has fallen for that trap, because you can get in that mode where you say, okay, I'm just going to do this, this, and this. And while you're doing that, you're actually not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that's the trap, because there are things you need to be figuring out, the strategy you need to be helping, figuring out what direction we're headed. And there's things you just should not be doing because they take too much time. And that's why you have the good people that you have and the team that you have. Everyone has to do their part.
I think, like I said, I have these conversations about leadership and management with folks all the time, and allocating time in the day and figuring out what it's okay to let go off your plate, or mm-hmm. what it's okay to delegate to someone else, and what things you really need to concentrate and focus your energy on. How did you start to learn that throughout your career? And are there any tips or strategies that you could share with folks who might be, you know, coming up behind you in the path?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you learn as you try to grow and try to get better is, at the end of the day, listening is the number one thing you can do. If I had to say one skill set that I still work on every day and still think that I need to work on and that helps me if I really do it correctly, is active listening. If you can truly sit with someone and listen to what they're telling you, they'll usually give you the answer you need. If you're busy trying to figure out what you're going to say next or what you need to say to them the whole time, it doesn't work. It never has, it never will. And so that, for me, has been, I just continue to try to get better at that, because I'll give an example. I've tried to have our team stop using cell phones in meetings because it's just too difficult to practice the act of listening. I'm not good enough, smart enough to keep track of my phone and actively listen and participate in what people are trying to tell me and what people are trying to do. So that, to me, is the biggest key. You know, as a sales rep, as soon as I figured out I really needed to listen to my customer and understand what they're trying to tell me, my sales improved so much as a sales rep, because I finally knew what the heck I needed to sell them. You know, I knew what they needed, which is the key part of that position.
Yeah, and I think from a body language standpoint, if you're sitting there with your phone mm-hmm. and you pick it up and you look at it, or it rings and you lean over and you go, oh, it's okay, I don't have to take that. There's a projection of disinterest. There's a projection, I think, sometimes of, well, I don't need to take it this time, but you're really not important. I might need to take it in a second.
It sends the wrong message. Not only does it send the wrong message, it also doesn't let you do what you're supposed to be doing in the first place. So that's, to me, one of the biggest things. As simple as that kind of sounds, it's very true.
Yeah. Part of being a leader is also helping develop the next generation of leaders. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you try to do to help coach and train? And we'll get to this a little bit later, but one of the things that you wouldn't have done if you were in furniture, we'll talk about that, is you would have been a coach. So yeah. How do you coach in this environment?
One of the things that I think is really big when you're trying to really help your team, particularly people that don't have as much experience, is you have to be willing to, there's going to be mistakes. I make them every day. You know, they're going to make them. And when those mistakes occur, there needs to be a level of encouragement to don't worry about not, I don't want you to stop making decisions because you made a mistake. I want you to keep going. One thing that my current boss, Paul Toms, told me that Clyde Hooker told him when he was pretty much taking the reins as CEO is that he told him that I want you to make decisions. I want you to do what you think is right. He said, I'm not going to stop you and I'm not going to make the decision for you. I may tell you I didn't like it, but I'm not going to tell you to not make decisions. So I think one of the key aspects and key driving factors to people growing up is letting them grow up, right? Letting them do what they need to do and make decisions. And there's going to be mistakes, but it's better than stopping progress. And by the way, that slips you back into what you talked about earlier, was I don't need to make every little decision for everyone. You know, they need to be making their decisions and they need to understand that we're headed a certain direction, but they each have ownership within their own process.
It's interesting, isn't it, how much business and parenting are in some ways similar, right? It's, you have to let your children kind of, I mean, let's use the classic example of a baby learning to walk, right? Mm-hmm. You watch them fall down on the floor, you don't pick them up and help them walk, you let them fall and get up and do it again. And and you don't say, well, I didn't do it right the first three times, well, this kid's never gonna walk.
Yeah, right.
It's just not an option.
Right, that's exactly right.
So,
and you know, we have talented, very talented merchants, and they want to head a certain direction a lot of times on specific product, and that's where you have to trust their talent. You know, they're here for a reason. They're here because they're really good at that. So you have to understand what you're good at, what you can help in the process, and what they're good at, and help that all combine healthily together.
Mm-hmm. So, what was it like? I mean, you were at Theodore Alexander, mm-hmm. and then you came to Hooker, and I mean, there's a certain, and I think a lot of people in this industry, because people stay in the industry, you go to competitors or you go to companies that have overlaps. And mm-hmm. What's it like when you walk into a company that you've been competing against, right? You're the new guy and people have seen you. And
you know, ironically, Theodore Alexander and Hooker, I don't look at, they're not big competitors.
Not direct, right.
However, probably the better parallel is I was vice president of sales at ART.
ART, right.
And that definitely, you know, was a competitor. You know, for me, it's all about doing what we do and trying to compete in the arena that we should be in. And it's interesting to say, I know we're competitors, we compete for floor space, but it's not something we think about on a daily basis.
Is it something that, we'll go back to that, you know, your first night coming to a new job, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to walk in, you're going to introduce yourself to a new team.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I first got to Furniture Today, I was new to the industry and I wanted to convey my respect for the history of Furniture Today.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that I did is I got pictures of each of my predecessors, the editor-in-chiefs, and I hung them on the wall to just let people know, even though I have not been here, I have respect for what you have achieved, and I respect the history of the brand. Were there some things that you thought about in terms of, or that you think about when you come into a new situation on a people level to kind of say to folks, I understand who you are, I respect who you are, I want to, was there anything that you said to them or did with them?
You know, I think that just having that, without saying anything specific, I had a huge amount of respect for Hooker. I always have.
How could you not? It's such an impressive company.
And I have a huge amount of respect for the company. One reason that you wouldn't come in and say necessarily something like that is because our culture is somewhat of a no superstar mentality.
Okay.
Right? So we're all pretty much one team. A lot of people here have been here a long time. You know, and that's really, when you look at the success of Hooker, it's not a lot of turnover. The fact that, you know, we had change at my level, and that was rare and different for this company. So there's a stability, and it's all driven by the culture that we have that I think that I'm extremely proud to be a part of, because it's just easy when you're with people that are really driven by that. They want to do the right thing. They, you know, they want to be good people. They want to help other organizations. I mean, we're heavy in Boys and Girls Club, United Way. We do a lot of things as a company that it's just amazing. When people get sick here, when people have problems in their family and there's issues, you wouldn't believe the amount of support that comes out of here. That, and no one, and the beauty of it is no one really knows who's doing what, but all of a sudden there's this massive amount of support, whether it be money coming from all different directions, cards, time, whatever it is. I'm just telling you that if something happens to someone here, there's an army, you know, which is really, really cool and not something I've ever really been a part of.
It also seems to be a workers' culture. I mean, people, we're doing this on podcast, so they can't see that I am sitting here in your office next to a wall of product photos, which I will not share any details, about. You'll all have to
Thank
wait
you.
Till market to find
it.
Out. Yeah. But, I mean, you're working. You have stuff up on the walls. You're going to be, as soon as I'm out of here, you're going to be making notes and doing all that kind of stuff. That seems to be very much part of the culture.
Yeah, it is a hardworking culture. It's a lot of fun because we all are in this. We're in a, I'll call it a grind, but we're all in it. And I think if you talk to people around here and get a feel for who they are, everyone is passionate about what they do, no matter which job they particularly have, and that's cool. So you're right, though. It's a working culture. There's not, you know, we don't have time to, we don't have a deep, you know, amount of people in, I'm probably saying it the wrong way, but we don't have these levels that where people can just say, well, I need you to do this. I mean, you gotta get at it.
I think that's the nature of business today, right? I mean, every company, I think, having gone through that last recession, those layers of extras, right? I think, I think this is probably true of most companies, is there's not a lot of waste. You spend a lot of time figuring out how do we get lean and how do we make everybody contribute as much as they can. I don't think that's...
I mean, I can tell you from the top of this company, down the hall, it's a working mentality, and it's great because that's how we get done what we need to get done, because it's hard to do otherwise.
Well, doesn't that go back to leadership also, right? You lead by example, and
there's
if people see you...
There's no doubt. That's absolutely true, and I'm a big believer in that. So thankfully, we seem to all enjoy working. So that's good.
That's the one thing I found out about the furniture business is it's filled with people who just love furniture.
It's just such a great industry, but it's always been about the people. And I've always said, if you can figure out your customer and your product, you know, the rest, you should be able to figure out the rest pretty easily.
Now, figuring out your customer, for you, that kind of goes back to where you started, right? I mean, you started at Lewis Shanks.
That's right. Now, I'll be forever grateful to the Four Woods for giving me an opportunity at Lewis Shanks. I came in right out of school, and it was just a great, great experience for me. I spent a lot of my day merchandising. It was 100-something thousand square foot store. And back then it was Sharpies and drop tags, so it wasn't computerized.
Old school.
Oh yeah, it was old school, and I had to know, you know, Sherrill Furniture was this, and this line was this, and I looked at things from Henkel Harris and LaBarge and Drexel Heritage and Henderdon. You could go down the line of different companies that I was able to learn a lot about why they did things and why they, you know, just perfect experience to start out in. I loved it. And it was tough, though. Really tough.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
I'll bet. Did you have to memorize different things?
Yeah, you just had to know, you know, how are we pricing every line and why are we doing it? And if we go on sale, what do you had to kind of have all that in your... But, you know, I was right out of school, so they didn't expect me to know as much as, you know, I'm sure, you know, I would have had to grow. But at the time, it seemed like a lot. So.
Was that good experience for when you became a manufacturer's rep?
Yes, very good. In fact, I worked, my first manufacturing rep position was with King Hickory, and my uncle was the VP of sales who's now part owner of Huntington House. And I'll again be forever grateful. He gave me my first opportunity as a sales rep. And he wouldn't have hired me, he said that, if I hadn't had retail experience. So it was critical to me.
So you really have a lot of family in the business.
I do. I've got Steve, and then Josh Pearsall is my cousin, and he's owns Huntington House, and so yeah, that's
kinda, and your wife
and my wife, yeah, my wife Robin, that's correct.
Yeah. So yeah, isn't it? It's a family business, isn't
yes.
it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. And there's a lot of great families in this industry. I mean, you could go down the line of a lot of retailers, a lot of manufacturers. Just look at the Hooker legacy with Clyde, and you've got just a ton of legacy in the entire industry.
Yeah, so it's pretty neat. It's a really great industry.
Yeah.
So let's I'm here again with Jeremy Hoff, president of Case Goods and Upholstery at Hooker Furniture. We're talking about furniture and life and philosophy. So let's take a little new direction. Let's talk about, if you hadn't been in the furniture business, what would you be? What would you have done? What would you like to have done?
Probably be a dream to be a college head football coach. And I think, I still think the leadership part of that would be a lot of fun. I'd like being around that age group, and I love the sport. So I think, as far as everybody always thinks about what would kind of a dream job be, that would be pretty cool.
What college?
Well, my alma mater is Indiana.
Uh-huh.
It's a little tough with football, but I think I got to go with Indiana.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe you could make them
you
an actual,
know.
Right?
Never
make
know.
Them competitive with
you
the Ohio
know.
State.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
you could
right.
be the Bobby Knight of Indiana football.
Or just take the yearly beatdown.
I understand. Yeah. I came, the school I graduated from, Stony Brook University, which when I was there, it was Division III. They're D1 now, but
wow.
still not anything
yeah, that's
that anybody's going to write home about.
Right. You know? Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. Did you ever do any youth football coaching when you're, because you have two boys who played football?
Yeah, I was always kind of there and helped when I could, but I always had a lot to do, and
uh-huh.
and but I tried to kind of be there when I could, and I did some soccer coaching too, with my youngest son, but and some basketball coaching. So I grew up in Indiana, so you had to play basketball as well.
Wasn't it like kind of a law?
Yeah. I went to Bob Knight basketball camp. And
did you?
Yeah.
Did you ever meet him?
I did. I met him, and then he told our group that, if we got into any trouble at the camp, he would call our eighth grade coach and have him cut us.
Wow!
So we were perfect angels.
I'll
we
bet.
Didn't do anything.
Wow, he's even tough with kids.
That would work at that time in Indiana. If Bob Knight called your coach, you'd be done.
Oh, I can imagine. Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
a great
so that
story.
Was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, you like to do some business reading. What do you like to read?
I don't get enough time necessarily. To read necessarily book after book. I enjoy it. I really enjoy it, candidly, the Wall Street Journal. I like reading that every day when I get a chance. And usually in the morning when I get up, I read through a pretty good part of that. So that's my main read.
I was hoping you would have said Furniture Today, but that's okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. I'm a Wall Street Journal fan.
All right. So anyway, that's my main one.
Okay. What do you do to relax when you do have some downtime?
Try to exercise. Which can be challenging. That always helps. I spend a lot of time when I'm not working with my family. So if I'm not having to travel or be overseas, or I see that as a huge opportunity to spend time with my family. I try to. My son still has a lot of football stuff, and if he has anything going on, I try to be at every one of anything he has going on, if it's a game or. He goes every weekend over to Charlotte to a team over there, so I go over there with him a lot on the weekend and things like that.
It's tougher watching than playing, isn't it? I mean, my son was a wrestler, and I had to stop my wife once. She was like, "Get off my son!"
That's an intense sport to watch your kid do.
Well, it's because it's one-on-one.
Right.
And at some point, they're
yeah.
on the ground with somebody on top of them,
yeah.
kind of squeezing them.
Right.
And
Yeah, they did it. Both of my sons did that in middle school. And that was definitely the most intense experience watching our kids in any sport. The second most would be my oldest son was a linebacker, and you know he's in on so many plays.
Oh yeah,
you just get worried, and then he's my youngest is a wide receiver, so it's my wife and I have found that's actually easier. You know, he's not in as many contact plays.
Do you find yourself saying, "Don't throw it to him. Don't throw it to him." Not quite. But
I think my wife would say she has. I've never said that. I'm probably a little bit the opposite.
Yeah, throw it to him. Come on, throw it to him. Yeah. Well, you know, nowadays you see wide receivers take some just really, really tough hits, right? Yeah. So you always worry about that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I like the outside plays a lot more than the inside.
Yeah. So. It's tougher being a parent, like I said, than playing, right?
Yeah,
you don't worry
is.
About yourself.
But. It is. And, you know, you get a little bit conflicted. If he wasn't doing that, what would he be doing? And it's like, okay, you want him doing, you and I talked about this before we got started with this, you want him doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves to play, and, you know, he's doing what he loves to do, and, you know, he's wears some of the best equipment and all that good stuff. And,
well, you know, it's interesting. You talked, I think team sports are such a good training ground. I mean, think about how you talked about the company here and how many times the word team came up in your discussion of Hooker,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
It's, I mean, business is a team sport.
Yeah.
And so having the skills to be able to work within a team, to lift up your teammates,
mm-hmm.
That's really important.
You learn a lot just playing any team sport. Really being with the team in general is a great training ground, and you know, he's learning things that he doesn't know he's learning right now, right? But he's learning a lot how to work hard. You know, he's training all the time. He gets up at 5:30 in the morning, goes and works out, and you know, so he's got his own grind going on that
kind of discipline,
consistent
though.
Yeah, and he's up when I don't have to get him up. He's up and out the door a lot of times before I am. So
that self-motivation
right,
is valuable.
Right, exactly. So that's a big, I've tell him, that's a huge skill set that you're training yourself on that's going to benefit you for your life. You know, and I think he seems to maybe get some of that. So
great.
16, you know.
16, is he driving?
Yes. Yeah, it's a little scary, too.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first time they out of your sight in a car. And
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast
that's
on
right.
parental
that's right.
worries.
That's exactly
right.
Right.
If you could sit down and have dinner with anyone throughout history, other than, you know, let's say a family member, right? Anybody who you could just have a conversation with about anything, who would that be?
I'll give you two. One would be that's obviously passed is Abraham Lincoln, and the other one that's still alive, of course, is Warren Buffett. So those would be my past and present, you know, dreams.
You might be able to work the Warren Buffett
well,
one.
Well, you know, maybe I'll talk to Irv Bumpkin and see if he'll get me close. No, I have so much respect for what he's done. And also, you know, it's interesting. For some reason, I feel like he's, if you just watch and listen to him and see how he's gone about his life, I think you would see some similarities between him and Clyde, you know, because there's this, I'll call it minimalist approach. The ego doesn't seem to be there. You know, he seems to have all of that in check. He's very real. He's just a common sense
mm-hmm.
guy that's incredibly smart and has figured out niches in business that obviously are huge. You know, and so I see some similarities.
Yeah, I never had the opportunity to meet Clyde Hooker, but when people speak of him, the word that seems to come up a lot is humility.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you're exactly right. That is the number one thing you hear. But you hear that, and you also hear he really cared about not only everyone here, but their families. He knew everyone's kids' names. He knew how old they were. He had a memory like you wouldn't even believe. But he also he cared enough to utilize the memory. I mean, he would, guys out in our warehouse, he'd ask them how they were doing, how's their son. He'd ask specifically, he would name them.
Mm.
You know, and at the time also, we had the factories here. So he knew, he was a legend in there. Everyone knew, you know, knew when he walked through and he would talk to everyone. He'd have these, I heard about meetings outside and the state of the company and how we're doing with the, you know, and it was a really, you hear, I you never hear anything about him other than just kind of legendary positive things that you kind of aspire to. You're like, man, I hope I can do some of that.
Well, that's where culture starts, right? I mean, when you talk about the company culture, that's the origin of that.
No question that it started with him, and that's the compass. That's the north, if mm-hmm. you will. So.
Lincoln, too, I think, is an interesting choice. I mean, when you think about, and everything in some way comes back to furniture, sorry about that, but mm-hmm. the industry is undergoing enormous change. The country is undergoing enormous change. And you think about someone like Lincoln having to lead through a period of absolutely tumultuous
chaotic
change.
Yeah, right.
Right? And the ability to manage personalities through change.
Yeah. Amazing. Just an amazing man. So that would be the one for sure for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have run through all of my questions, but is there anything else that you'd like to talk with to people about, or any secrets that you'd like to share?
I appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully this is anything anyone would want to listen to.
I think people would want to listen to this kind of stuff.
We'll
so I really
out.
Appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.